The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
President Trump's prediction that the Iranians want to make a nuclear deal is holding up tonight as Iranian and American diplomats are leaving private meetings with each other with a new understanding that could avoid a new war. But war fighters are still being moved into position just in case.
According to a U.S. official, at today's indirect talks in Geneva, progress was made, but there are still a lot of details to discuss. The Iranians said they would come back in the next 2 weeks with detailed proposals to address some of the open gaps in our positions. Until then, the Iranians agree. Progress has been made. As diplomats from the U.S. and Iran chatted indirectly today, the Iranians closed the Strait of Hormuz for live fire exercises. And the Ayatollah shared an ominous warning.
They say, we sent a ship to Iran. Of course, a warship is a dangerous vessel, but even more dangerous is the weapon that can send it to the bottom of the sea.
Despite the threats, the U.S. military is surging additional assets to the Middle East.
Now, we would very much like, as the president has said, to resolve this through a conversation and a diplomatic negotiation, but the president has all options on the table. And, you know, one thing about the negotiation I will say this morning is, you know, in some ways it went well. They agreed to meet afterwards. But in other ways, it was very clear that the president has set some red lines that the Iranians are not yet willing to actually acknowledge and work through. So we're going to keep on working it. But of course, the president reserves the ability to say when he thinks that diplomacy has reached its natural end. We hope we don't get to that point. But if we do, that'll be the president's call.
So that's why they're talking. But they have no interest in actually dismantling their nuclear program, limiting their missiles, or ceasing their support for proxies. And both President Trump and Secretary Rubio have been very clear. Those are the conditions. So we'll see. If they get enough economic pain, maybe there's a deal to be had. But it's hard for me to see it coming out of Geneva right now.
It's all that a deal is next to impossible. No. I think they want to make a deal. I don't think they want the consequences of not making a deal. They want to make a deal.
On Friday, Trump was asked if he'd want to see regime change in Iran.
Well, it seems like that would be the best thing that could happen. For 47 years, they've been talking and talking and talking. In the meantime, we've lost a lot of lives.
Trump has long voiced skepticism about sending ground troops into Iran. And the kinds of U.S. firepower arrayed into the Middle East so far suggest options for strikes primarily by air and naval forces.
Second aircraft carrier that you decided to send. Yeah. Talk about why you made that choice.
Well, in case we don't make a deal, we'll need it. If we don't have a deal, we'll need it. If we have a deal, we could cut it to it. It'll be leaving.
To me, General, Iran is not going to give up its nuclear weapons. There will not be any real sustainable peace deal. Is the US actually just buying time for all its forces to be in place for a strike?
I do think President Trump in earnest is trying to make a nuclear deal. It is a pattern of behavior that he has displayed. He tried to do this prior to the 12-day war. He gave Iran 60 days to make a deal. On the 61st day, Israel attacked Iran. I believe the path that we're really on here, I agree with you, I don't see Iran making a deal. After all, I really think the preferred option and the most likely option is the combined Israel and United States attack to clearly do a number of things. One, to set the conditions for regime collapse, leadership targets, the entire infrastructure that sustains this regime.
So I think we're at a point where a strike is now close. I would say 48 hours, 72 hours away. And that's based on seeing a very significant number of American combat aircraft moving in from Europe into the Middle Eastern theater. And really the last thing to watch for, which is what happened last June, is American air-to-air refuelers come into the theater because they're there to keep those fighters in the air. And I think that's the final stage. So, you know, by the time we get to the weekend, Australian time, I think that's the highest likelihood chance of an American strike at that point.
Look, I can't imagine that there's a deal that President Trump would take. I've seen the Iranians. We all have experienced this. They're not willing to give up their ballistic missiles or enrichment. They're not going to stop their terror. This is 47 years of a resistance regime, a bunch of theocrats who just don't see the world the way we do. I think that in the end, there can't be a deal that President Trump will find acceptable. And that means President Trump will make good on his commitment. He told the Iranian people who rose up, he said, help is on the way. I'm confident that he meant exactly what it was that he said.
So much peace. It's breaking out everywhere. A massive military buildup by the United States in the Middle East surrounding Iran. And you know, one thing you think about, at least if you've been with God's work for the past few decades, is what this church was saying following 9/11. There was a massive buildup of U.S. forces in the Middle East back then as well. And it seems America went after everyone except Iran. And back then, this is late November of 2001 at the trumpet. Tomorrow's news today. And we were talking about if you tiptoe around the head of the snake, that would be Iran. The problem's not going away. Wow, 25 years on from that. And you look at how it ended for America in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And now here we are again having to confront the head of the snake. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. If you'd like to email the program, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. Just to go to that article, this is November of 2001. This is after the terrorist strike on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon in 2001, September 11, obviously. It says here, Iran, this is by Joel Hilliker, Iran is the one Mideast country with the power, the determination, and the resources to be the king of the South. Its long-held objective is to become the undisputed leader in the region. Further on, it says here, Iran has been stockpiling weapons and delivery systems. Further on, and building production capabilities, manufacturing biological agents and long-range missiles, pushing for uranium conversion facilities for years. Make no mistake about it. Iran is the head of the snake. And 25 years ago, we went after every nation except the head of the snake. And now here we have the head of the snake again. And we're in negotiations and people desperately want a deal. But as President Trump just acknowledged there, I mean, it's been 47 years of talk. It's amazing, isn't it? The two big stories that are emerging this week. And, you know, we've been following them for decades. The radical Islamist king of the South, headed up by Iran. And of course, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Those are the two dominant themes in the news, in the regular news cycle. Forget about the trumpet for a minute. The King of the South, the power of the King of the South. And then all of these calls, even from American conservative publications, what Europe needs is an empire. And as I'll read to you later, they're calling for the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, actually using that term. The Holy Roman Empire. Well, they're going to get what they want one final time. But these two dominant themes, these two stories that we've been following for years, my father and before him, Herbert Armstrong, I mean, it's all there, and he was right. If you don't have this publication, it's a must read. All the prophecies that Herbert Armstrong pointed us to for so many years, for decades, in fact. How could a man know? Well, this is on the back cover. Let me just read some of this to you. How could a man know who died? How could a man who died in 1986 know that Germany would unite and rise to dominate Europe? Herbert Armstrong died 40 years ago. How could he know? How could he know this? How could he know that the Iron Curtain would fall? That happened too, following his death. How could he know that a squabbling continent would form a European Union? How could Herbert Armstrong know this? He died, remember, 40 years ago. How could he know that the Catholic Church would grow in political influence? How could he know these things? How could he know that American financial instability would spur European unity? That's what we're seeing. How could he know that Britain would leave the European Union? That happened in 2016. 30 years after Mr. Armstrong died. Now we're 40 years on. How could he know that America, despite military superiority, would lose its wars? It's hard to see a positive outcome coming from this military buildup. America maybe about to do what it should have done 25 years ago, or even 47 years ago, if you go back to the beginning of this Islamist revolution. How could he know that despite the military superiority, America would lose its wars? Well, look at all the wars of the 90s. Iraq, as I say, Afghanistan. Look at how we left Afghanistan just a few years ago. A shameful retreat. And now here we come again. We have to. We've got to send in the forces in order to pressure them to make a deal. Once we make a deal, then everything's solved. Well, was it solved 47 years ago or 42 years ago or 25 years ago or 15 years ago? Look at the history. Listen to this from He Was Right. How could a man who died in 1986 know that the transatlantic alliance would fracture? How could he know this? How could he know that Britain would be out and that the alliance, the transatlantic alliance, would rupture? And that's it. That's the end of it. How could he know that the radical left would undermine and sabotage America? Well, I could keep going, but you need to get this book yourself. He Was Right. And then this one here, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. These two themes, these two stories, as I say, we've been watching these trends being fulfilled now for decades. We've been talking about it for decades. Europe uniting, astonishing the world. And, of course, the King of the South pushing at Europe, the King of the North. This is from an article in 2009 at The Trumpet. He Was Right. It says, Daniel 11, verses 40 to 44, could be considered the keynote prophecy of The Trumpet. And as Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury explains in The King of the South, this is an end-time prophecy about the clash of three distinct power blocks. Verse 40, I mean, that's what's coming into play here right now. Daniel 11 and verse 40. It discusses the first clash, which occurs when the King of the North, a German-led European empire, invades the Middle East and destroys the King of the South, led by Iran. This clash marks the beginning of World War III. That's in the King of the South booklet. I should have brought that to the table as well. But here we see this massive buildup around Iran today. Trump moves closer to a major war with Iran. That's from Axios this morning, and you saw the montage, the buildup. It says a U.S. military option in Iran would likely be a massive weeks-long campaign that would look more like full-fledged war than last month's pinpoint operation in Venezuela, sources say. Iran's much bigger, much more powerful than Venezuela. I mean, the stakes, they're enormous right here. And again, you think back to what could have been the article that we had in The Trumpet at that time, November 2001, the head of the snake George Bush was president at the time. Present targets in the war on terrorism are only one tendril of the monster. Will the U.S. strike at its head? Here's how the war will end. And basically the article says, if we don't go for the head of the snake, the problem will not go away. Here we are now, 25 years later. Tomorrow's News Today says here, Trump's armada has grown to include 2 aircraft carriers, a dozen warships, hundreds of fighter jets, and multiple air defense systems. Some of that firepower is still on the way. And again, you can certainly see part of this as also part of the temporary resurgence of the United States, and maybe there will be a show of power here. But ultimately, it's not going to end well for America. It's hard to imagine sending all of this military equipment over there just as a bluff. But there's no doubt. I mean, President Trump said so himself, that it's there to pressure Iran to make a deal. And if no deal is made, well, what will come of this conflict or potential conflict? In The King of the South, my father says, Iran is extremely radical, the king over radical Islam. It says, where is the nation's pushiness leading? It's leading to war, just as it has in the past. It's leading inevitably to terrifying war with weapons of mass destruction. It can lead nowhere else. It's going to be the trigger that sets off World War III. So Iran's not going to go away. And somehow, some way, America is going to wash its hands of this case, and Europe is going to be left to deal with this problem. And as it happens, Europe is rebuilding its military machine. What perfect timing with respect to Daniel 11 and verse 40. Europe is rebuilding its empire. The seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. It is on its way. This article at the American Conservative. It's hard to believe you're seeing these kinds of articles in American publications. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with our understanding of history? Why isn't there anyone sounding the alarm? A German war machine? Are we sure we want this? A seventh and final resurrection? Of course, the world doesn't see Napoleon and Hitler as part of the resurrections of the whole Roman Empire. But even still, to go back to Otto the Great and Charlemagne and say, that's what we need. We need a European empire. We need to return to when Europe had rivers of blood flowing through it. Is that what we want? I thought peace was breaking out. Well, you know better. This article from the American Conservative. It's by Dr. Anton Friesen. He's a member of the Committee of Foreign Affairs at the Bundestag. He served at the Bundestag as an AfD party member from 2017 to 2021. So he comes from the far right. And here he is contributing to this piece, or I guess he wrote it. And he actually uses the term Holy Roman Empire. Our correspondent in Britain, Richard Palmer, he feels like that the thinking behind this article could end up being quite influential. And of course, because of Bible prophecy, we know that it will. But these articles, again, you could dismiss it and say, well, they come out every couple weeks. What's the big deal? It's all talk and no action. It's in action. It's in motion. A proposal for a new European order. That's at the American Conservative. This is not a European publication. It's an American publication. Europe is built on 3 metaphorical hills, namely Calvary, Christianity, the Capitoline Hill, hopefully I got that right, Roman law, and the Acropolis, Greek philosophy. It says one concept that brings unity to this diversity is the European idea of empire. He says the Holy Roman Empire and the Habsburg monarchy, for all their shortcomings, and there's quite a few of those, that's sugarcoating it. It's more than shortcomings. Again, we're talking about rivers of blood. The Holy Roman Empire and the Habsburg monarchy, for all of their shortcomings, coped with internal diversity for centuries under the rule of the emperor. Europe, then guided by a modern democratic version of the idea of empire, must follow a middle way between a federal state and a confederation of states. It really is astonishing that he's even using the name Holy Roman Empire. Most other commentators have kind of danced around that and said, well, we need a stronger union. We need a unified military force. Here's a guy saying, no, we need the Holy Roman Empire. That's what we need. We need another, and he even mentions the Habsburg dynasty. Now, as I say, they don't count, most historians don't count Napoleon and Hitler, his regime, as an extension of that Holy Roman Empire system. So we know if you count them as number five and number six, the only one that's left is the seventh and final one. But even if you look at the first four, which historians do get right, that's what this man's calling for. That's right, Charlemagne, Otto the Great, and so on. The Habsburg dynasty, they're all covered in this article. It's pretty amazing. Charles the Fifth, he was the fourth head, and again, you can read all about that. I'd suggest you get this one too. We don't draw as much attention to this, but this is Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. You've got the fourth head, that's Charles the Fifth. He was a Habsburg. And then before him, Otto the Great, the third head, Charlemagne, the second head, and so on. And that's what this guy keys in on. We need it. We need an emperor. We need to bring Europe together. Daniel chapter 2, verse 42 says, and as the toes of the feet, this is speaking of the Daniel 2 image, and you get down to the toes and you see, again, that seventh and final resurrection. It's a mixture of iron and clay. And some would say, well, that's impossible to bring together. And it is difficult, but it happens for a short time, just to bring in the prophecy in Revelation 17. It says here, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. There's strength there. There's Roman Empire strength. And there's also some weakness. And that's why they need to rid themselves of some dead weight. And the Bible says that they'll do that as it comes down to the 10 toes or the 10 kings. Revelation 17 and verse 12, Herbert Armstrong, again, how could a man who died in 1986 know this? He died 40 years ago, and here he is talking about Europe as a divided entity, but only temporarily then united for that final, that last and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. This is clip three.
And in the toes of the feet, part of iron, part of clay, so the kingdom will be partly strong and partly weak. And whereas, as you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, they'll mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Now, those toes represent the government that I say is going to come to restore the Holy Roman Empire, and they won't stay together. They won't stay together but a matter of days or a few weeks at the most, because some of them are strong. Germany is pretty strong, but some of these nations are going to be pretty weak, and they won't stay together.
How could he know? How did he know this? Well, of course, Daniel 2 informed him. His signature prophecy, really, was about the Holy Roman Empire, that seventh and final resurrection. He talked about how it would return over and again. He wrote about it in The Plain Truth. Here's another clip from a message he gave in the 80s, clip 5.
There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it, because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming.
Not many people believe it, he said. Well, now people are starting to believe it. People are calling for it. Marco Rubio's over at the Munich Security Conference saying, hey, yeah, we need allies that can defend themselves. Come on, Europe. Go ahead, get your military. Go for it. It has America's blessing. However it plays out in Iran, somehow or another, Iran's going to come through. I'm talking about the U.S. buildup over there right now. Somehow or another, Iran's going to come through in a better position than before. And meanwhile, you've got America, for its part again, with respect to Europe, saying, let's get going. Let's get the empire up and running. This was Rubio from the Munich Security Conference over the weekend, clip 10.
Because we know that the fate of Europe will never be irrelevant to our own. We do not want our allies to be weak, because that makes us weaker. We want allies who can defend themselves so that no adversary will ever be tempted to test our collective strength. This is why we do not want our allies to be shackled by guilt and shame. We want allies who are proud of their culture and of their heritage, who understand that we are heirs to the same great and noble civilization, and who together with us are willing and able to defend it.
They're our allies, Europe. A lot of nice talk considering how J.D. Vance spoke last year, and of course Trump more recently at Davos. And now they're making nice. Now it sounds good. And now, I mean, you hear him say, what did he say? We do not want our allies to be shackled by guilt. I mean, he's talking specifically about Germany. Listen, you don't need to worry about what happened a century ago or even less than that. It's the same sentiment that Elon Musk had when he threw his support behind AfD. Look, the young people of Germany today, they shouldn't be held responsible for what their grandparents did. Just move on. Why be shackled? Just build the empire. And Europe's over there saying, okay, this is great. This is what we've always wanted. We've always wanted another crack at the American empire, the superpower. And here, total ignorance with respect to Isaiah 10 and other prophecies that talk about, you know, America being betrayed by its lovers. And the Assyrian power coming at America, a hypocritical nation, God using it as an instrument to correct our nations. It's all coming into alignment perfectly with the Holy Scriptures. Are you ready for it? Are you sobered by it? Do you see it? Mr. Armstrong said it's going to emerge and people won't see it. People are blind to it. But you don't have to be. God can show you if you're willing to dig into the Bible. And I mean, we were just talking in class this morning about going through John 8 and 9 about how very different Jesus Christ is compared to what preachers say about Christ. I mean, here it's just one confrontation after another, and he told the Pharisees point blank, listen, if I told you that I wasn't at one with my Father, or I didn't have this close, intimate relationship with our Father in heaven, I'd be lying, just like you people lie. That's the Christ of the Bible. That's the Christ who called them out, who exposed their evil, their hypocrisy, their sin. And at the end of John 8, I mean, they were gathering up stones, large stones, to stone him. They wanted to murder Christ. And they talked about how religious they were and how they were of their father Abraham, and that made them special. Why do you think you're so special? And why do you speak blasphemy when you say you're at one with the Father in heaven? This world is in for a rude awakening when their eyes are finally open to see what has been prophesied for 2,000 and 3,000 years. This article from the American Conservative says Richard von Cloudenhove, in his highly influential work, Pan-Europa of 1923, posited a need to spread the knowledge that all of Europe's national cultures are closely and inextricably connected parts of a great and uniform European culture. You see, it's iron and clay, but what are the elements What are the influences that can bring it together for that short time? He says here, this can be done in a new European confederation, which should be created by funding a compulsory course for every university and college student in the foundations of Western civilization. Western civilization. We have a class that goes by that name here at God's College. But it's very different than the one is that's talked about in this article. I mean, when they talk about the foundation of Western civilization in Europe, they're talking about Europe's Catholic and Roman heritage. And when you look at the history, again, it takes you right through. Charlemagne, Otto the Great, the Habsburg dynasty, all of them. And, of course, the rivers of blood. Don't forget about the violence part. Don't forget about the conflict. Here again, going back to these three pillars or metaphorical hills I quoted earlier. The Calvary, that would be Christianity or the Roman Catholic Church. You've got the Capitoline Hill, Roman law, and then you've got the Acropolis, Greek philosophy. So you've got the Great False Church, you've got the Beast Power, and you've got the Devil's philosophy as well. The Devil's education. This article, it says here, according to the Belgian historian David Engels, the Europe of the future, because of its cultural, religious, and ethnic diversity, will have an organizational structure that is confined to shared core interests, namely defense. Where have you heard this before? It talks about common armed forces, including the communitization of the French nuclear weapons. In other words, France needs to share its nuclear weapons. That way Germany can have access as well. Where could this be leading? And who told you? More than 40 years ago, 60, 70 years ago, how could a man who died in 1986 know that this was coming? Because of the sure word of Bible prophecy, God's purpose shall stand. God's prophecies are sure. So you've got the United Armed Forces. You've got home affairs policy, police cooperation in cross-border criminal prosecution, and then the protection of external borders from illegal migration. And it also mentions finance. Again, who has talked about all three of these things for decades? Common army, finally securing the borders against Muslim immigration, or the King of the South. And then, of course, Herbert Armstrong always talked about the financial or economic union that would be needed for this empire as well. Here's Mr. Armstrong talking about these elements that are mentioned in this article, clip 4.
Now, a united Europe will bring about a power, a superpower, because the nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it. And it's possible that the now present Pope may, or a future one, however it may be, extend his good offices to help them bring about what they would like to have in Europe, not only economical cooperation, but an absolute political union with a common currency and a common military force. There is a great deal of nuclear power and weapons over there belonging to the United States, but which they could easily just take over. And they could become a stronger power than either the United States or Russia.
How could a man who died in 1986 know this? He knew it. He prophesied of it. That was from the early 1980s. As I say, he died in 1986. This article at the American Conservative says the figurehead of this structure will be the president of the European Union, who, rather like the Holy Roman Empire, will act as a mediator together with the commission under his or her authority in the resolution of disputes. In other words, you've got to have a head over the federation. You've got to have an emperor. Further on, it says, David Engels conceives of a structure of Western Europe as of a defensive alliance against the expansion of Chinese and Russian influence. but it should also limit the influence of the United States. See, this is the direction. Mr. Armstrong said they've always wanted an empire, but they just don't know how. Well, now they're figuring it out. Now they're beginning to see, okay, this is how it has to happen. We've got to go back to our roots. We've got to go back to the foundation of the Holy Roman Empire. We've got to go back to Charlemagne. We've got to go back to the Habsburgs. We've got to go back to Otto the Great. We need that history. We need to, well, Mertz, I think Mr. Livingston played some quotes or clips from him at the Munich Security Conference the other day. But here he is, and we've made this point previously too, but here he is talking about the need for just having a new mindset, a new way of thinking. This is clip 8.
So the most important thing is to turn the switch in our minds now. We have understood that in the era of big powers, our freedom is no longer a given. It is at stake. We will need to show firmness and determination to assert this freedom.
We need a new mindset. This article, I think this is the next bit in my notes. I'm kind of shifting pages around here. But it says here, the figurehead of this structure will be the president of the European Union, who, listen to this, he's already used the terminology Holy Roman Empire, but he says who, rather like the Holy Roman Emperor, will act as a mediator. So we've got the Empire and we've got the Emperor. It says here, David Engels conceives of the structure of Western Europe as that of a defensive alliance. Well, I think I read through that part and gave you the quote. Let me just skip ahead. It says, the common armed forces, moreover, could be used to secure global trade routes against terrorism and piracy together with Russia and China. Now, where could this be leading? You know, once this empire is in shape, then we can begin to work together with Russia and China and we can secure these global trade routes. Notice who's not mentioned. That would be Uncle Sam. You see, America, under Trump's leadership, it's seen now as the enemy. A menace when it comes to global trade, slapping tariffs on everybody. So look, we've got to work together with Russia and China. Here you see the Mart of Nations. Just project a little bit ahead. That's all that it takes. It says, because these transnational dangers threaten all of us, look into Isaiah 23. Understand where this is leading, where it's headed. This is from the same article. A new European confederation would concentrate on its own borders, just as they define states, borders also define, just as they define states, borders also define people and societies. So here they're talking about a stronger border security. It says the new European confederation must resolve to stop the enlargement process. In other words, there's what, 26, 27 members right now? We've got to stop enlarging. And just set it, make it secure. I mean, here again, when you think of the mindset change here, it's easy to see how that they would, you know, get rid of some of the dead weight as well. Not just stop it, but downsize it. Because we're working with iron and clay, and we need something that will bring everyone together. Bible says it'll be a short time, but there's going to be iron-like, Holy Roman Empire-like strength. It says here, the borders of that confederation should correspond to the boundaries of Catholic and Protestant Europe. So here's the Catholic Church presiding over this forming beast. As the late American political scientist Samuel Huntington proposed, all efforts to expand into the Orthodox countries of Eastern Europe must be halted. We've got to get Islam out, radical Islam out. We've got to cut free of the dead wood. And go forward with strength, an empire with an emperor. This is from my father's 2025 Key of David program. Germany is seeking a new Charlemagne. Again, when you read about all these things at the American Conservative or wherever, you have to keep coming back to, you know, where you heard it first. This is clip 7.
See, so even today, German leaders talk about getting a Charlemagne. I mean, many of them do. They want a new Charlemagne, a strong leader over Europe, which will really be the Holy Roman Empire. It's going to be pared down to 10 kings. according to Bible prophecy, and it will happen. The prophecies are always fulfilled. There will be those 10 nations and 10 kings. And we mentioned how this union will be horrifying. History bears this out. Conspiracy, betrayal, bloodshed, intolerance, execution, and so on. That is what is going to happen in that Holy Roman Empire. And they are not going to be friends of America or Britain or the Jewish state. They are not going to be our friends. And we need to keep that in mind. If you look at what they've done in the past, well, it's very frightening.
And Secretary Rubio's over there saying, well, they're our best friends, and they need an empire, and they need to be able to defend themselves. It has our blessing. Here again from that Munich Security Conference, listen to Friedrich Merz, clip 9.
And it is for very good reasons that we have our difficulties in Germany with state power. Since 1945, it has been deeply enshrined in our thinking that we need to rein in this power. And let me add, it is not just too much state power that destroys the foundation of our freedom. Too little state power will lead you to a different path, but to the same result. And this question has a very much European dimension. Already 15 years ago, Radek Sikorski told us Germans, I fear German power less than German inactivity. This, too, is part of our responsibility that arises from our basic law, our history, and our geography. We assume this responsibility. I often said that, and I will repeat it today. We will make the Bundeswehr the strongest conventional army in Europe as soon as we can. An army that stands firm when it has to. We are strengthening Europe. A sovereign Europe is our best answer to this new era. Uniting Europe and strengthening Europe is our prime task today.
It's all seen as such a wonderful development. A breakout of peace. More peace as Europe builds its military machine and as Germany takes the lead. The mindset has definitely changed. This is from Politico. 1 in 5 Europeans say dictatorship might be preferable. Is this another ho-hum, you know, yawn and walk away peace? Just glance at the headline and then move on. 20%? Perhaps a little bit more, they say, well, it might be preferable, a dictatorship. And so many of these countries and what's forming as the Holy Roman Empire, I mean, we know the Daniel 8 man's coming in by flatteries. So doesn't even seem like he needs to get much of the vote, if there even is a vote. But even the way that these countries vote today, because there's so many different parties, it's not like a two-party state in America. I mean, in some of these nations, these European nations, you get 25, 26% of the vote and you're in. Well, what if 25 or 26% prefer the dictator? Listen, America's got its strongman. This is the way Europe sees it. America's got its strongman. Russia's got a strongman. So why shouldn't we have a strong dictator? Listen, if you go back to the foundation of the Holy Roman Empire, the Habsburgs, the Otto the Greats, the Charlemagnes, that was not a democratic process there. These were dictators. And Europe is prophesied to get one more. That's right. And when it happens, it will shock the world because the world is asleep. Because the world is blind. This article says 22% say that in certain cases, a dictatorship may be the preferred option. 26% agreed with the statement. If there was a capable and effective leader in my country, I wouldn't mind if they limited democratic rights and were not accountable to citizens for their actions. 26% of Europeans agree with this. Yeah, I mean, if he was a strong, capable leader, I don't mind putting certain limitations or restrictions on democracy. 26%. The mindset is changing. The article says some 76% of Greeks, for example, express discontent with how democracy works in their country, compared to 68% in France, 66% in Romania, and on it goes. The study comes at a time of rising support for populist and nationalist forces across the continent, with far-right parties riding high in the polls in Germany, France, and the UK. It's a movement, and it's gaining momentum. Mr. Hilliker in the trumpet brief this morning has a fair bit to say about religion, its revival in Europe. The traditional roots, they're beginning to show. Let me just read to you a little bit from what I covered in class today. This is John 9, where this man who was blind from birth, and Jesus said, you know, he's not at fault for the blindness. His parents aren't. This was of God. This is God's purpose. I mean, God orchestrated this to reinforce a lesson that Jesus taught or proclaimed on the last great day. It was actually a double Sabbath, a weekly Sabbath, the Saturday Sabbath, and then also an annual Sabbath, the last great day. And of course, the Sabbath typifies the wonderful world tomorrow following Christ's return, 1,000 years of utopia when people will finally be able to see. And same for those that come up in the great white throne judgment. That's in Ezekiel 37 and Revelation 20. I don't have time to read all of it. But the eyes of humanity are about to be opened. Right now, blindness has set in. Right now, like Isaiah 59 says, we're just groping in the dark. We can't find our way. We don't know that we're on the course of Satan the devil, the course of this world. Ephesians 2:2, 2 Corinthians 4:4. It's Satan's philosophy that is reigning supreme on this earth. Satan's way of get, of competition, an arms race, all these things. Negotiating, but then lying, deceit for 47 years. Agreeing to this, but then refusing this. Or agreeing to this and then saying no thanks years later. This blind man that's healed, Christ had him, he put together some mud with spittle and put it in his eye, and then he said, go and wash yourself at the pool of Siloam. And of course, the washing typified baptism, which is the key to receiving sight. Repentance, baptism, and the laying on of hands and the receipt of the Holy Spirit. And then you begin to see what God sees. And then you can begin to look into the sure word of prophecy and know this is sure. This is certain. This is coming to pass. John 9 and verse 8, it says, the neighbors therefore, and they which before had seen him, that he was blind, said, is not this he who sat and begged? And some said, this is he. Others said, he is like him. Or no, it's just a lookalike. It's not really him, because he can see now. And the guy who's healed says, it's me. I've been healed. And therefore said they unto him, how were your eyes opened? How did this happen? How are you able to see? And he answered and he said, a man that is called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and washed and received sight. And they said to him, where is he? And he didn't know. So they were trying to get to the bottom. How did this happen? You would think the natural reaction would be to jump up and down. Well, congratulations, you can see now. Of course, the Pharisees, for their part, they wanted to go after Jesus and stone him. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind, and it was the Sabbath day, and when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. And then the Pharisees asked how that he received his sight, and he said he put on his clay and so on. The Pharisees were outraged because all this happened on the Sabbath. That's just the way they thought. They were self-righteous. They were arrogant, stubborn, argumentative, and above all, they were blind. They were blind. They couldn't see. They couldn't see God in Jesus Christ. Listen to this. Again, Mr. Armstrong's talking about prophecy here and that seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. This is clip two.
Gradually and now faster and faster, a new power is being developed from underneath the surface, a new world power, which the public now least suspects, which the world does not yet see, doesn't realize, doesn't dream is coming, but it is developing just as prophesied in Europe, a resurrected Roman Empire that will combine some 350 millions of population, a power so mighty that our Western peoples will stand aghast when it flashes suddenly into full being. Yes, your Bible says that the world will be startled.
The world will be startled because blindness has set in. Darkness envelops the earth. And that's why you have Secretary Rubio over there saying, come on, let's get the empire going. Or this AFD member, former member, writing at the American Conservative, of all places, saying we need a Holy Roman Empire. We need an emperor. We need one like Charlemagne. We need one like Otto the Great. Read about those heads of the Holy Roman Empire in this book. Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. Read the history so that you know what leaders today are calling for. That history, I mean, that should be guiding our policy, our discussions, our agenda, but it's not. It's not guiding the Jeroboam administration, the history of World War II, or even World War I. History, the farther you go back, you know, Winston Churchill used to make the point, the farther you go back, the further you can see into the future. But we're erasing it, or we're revising it, basically saying, you know, we don't need to be shackled by some of this messy history where there was so much violence and bloodshed. Let's just move on. Why should we be shackled by something that happened 3-4 generations ago? Just move on and build the military machine and then talk endlessly about peace. The two dominant stories, or at least they should be, you've got the confrontation with the King of the South. Right now it's America. Soon it'll be Europe. A German-led European empire. But you've got the King of the South, and you've got the now forming seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire in Europe. And its heart, its beating heart, as Mr. Armstrong used to say, is in Germany. It's Daniel 11 and verse 40. These are prophetic developments we've been following for decades. Tomorrow's news today. How could he know? How could a man who died in 1986, how could a man who died 40 years ago know all about this? Know about everything we've been talking about on today's show? Why was he right? He was right because he was a student of Bible prophecy, and so many of those prophecies are cataloged in this wonderful brochure, recently updated, by the way. It's got a spine now because we had to add more pages. He was right. Don't forget the other two that I mentioned, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. That's the one my father quoted in that clip I just played for you. And then this one here, the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.